We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey guys, what's up? Kevin Jones, founder of Blue Wire. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Do me a favor, send it to one of your friends. We're growing this network, grassroots style. It takes everyone. You're a part of our team if you send this to one of your friends. All right, enjoy this podcast and appreciate your support.
Hello, welcome to the Eurostep episode 12, the Bucks clinch number one seed edition. I'm Kane Pittman, and I'm joined by Ty Windisch, as always, on a Friday afternoon. How are you doing, Ty?
Devastated after the abomination that happened last night. I don't think our nation or our world will ever get over the sheer horror of what took place during this basketball game, Kane, but I'm trying.
Yeah, I agree. I struggled to sleep last night, and I've really been thinking how I can really put what I saw on the basketball court into words. And thankfully, I think we've had someone do it for us on 95.7, The Fan, 97.5, The Fanatic in Philadelphia, that is, I should say. I think their radio announcer really explained what we were all feeling.
Just the atrocity committed by our own Eric Bledsoe. I don't know how we can view Bledsoe the same after this.
It was heinous, but I don't want to. Let's not waste any more time. Let's go straight to the audio, and try and stay composed to all the listeners out there. It's a
moment of silence necessary here.
It's pretty horrific, but here we go. I'm going to cut straight to it.
Hooper to shoot a three, and he makes them pay. Joel and Embiid. Whoa, man! There's that Bledsoe. Falling Embiid. Oh my! He just fired a ball, Budenholzer, in the face of Eric Bledsoe. He's got to be tossed out of here. Are you kidding me? Unbelievable. I have not seen a violent act like that in years. Get him out. Unbelievable. He hit him right in the face. He threw it from 20 feet away.
Well, there it is. One of the absolute goat calls of all time of Eric Bledsoe, for those who watch the game. Look, there's a little bit of heat on the ball, but he tossed the ball at a 7-foot man, Joel Embiid, hit him in the chest, nowhere near his face, first of all. And this guy's just completely lost it. Honestly, I want to know if he's okay right now because, I'm concerned about him.
I think my favorite part is it sounds like he snuck the word Budenholzer in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And like, depending on how you read it, it sounds like he threw Mike Budenholzer at Embiid.
This guy's a complete maniac. I love the way it starts, and he's like, there's that Bledsoe. It's like, this is like Bledsoe's going around just beating people up on the court every night. What is this guy on about? He's just an absolute maniac.
Jerry Antetokounmpo to shoot a three, and he makes them pay. Joel and Embiid. Whoa, man!
Whoa!
There's that Bledsoe. Ah, incredible call. Obviously, you know, I guess everyone saw it, but Embiid threw the ball at Bledsoe, then Bledsoe threw it back with some pretty serious velocity, but again, nowhere near his face. Everyone was okay. If you were just listening to that call and you were driving in the car, I have no idea what you would have been imagining in your head.
Do you think Bledsoe just picked up Mike Budenholzer, chucked him at Joel Embiid's face? It was a heinous act. It was. Did he say the word devastation, or am I bringing that into this?
No, you're bringing it in, but you can bring any type of emotive words for a heinous situation. Honestly, scary stuff. Scary stuff from Eric Bledsoe, but. He did get thrown out of the game. This was at the 9:24 mark of the first quarter. So, you know, when you really, I guess, get back to actually what was happening on the floor for Milwaukee, this was, you know, threw a spanner in the works, to say the least, to start this game because...
It did what?
Spanner in the works? Is that like... Is that
a spider in the works?
A spanner.
I don't know what that is.
It's like a wrench.
Oh, we would just, yeah, okay. I get you.
A spanner in the works? You've never heard that?
No, we don't call them spanners here.
Oh, man. Oh, there we go. I don't know if I've thrown anything, any sort of Australian term out there that's thrown you off on the Eurostep.
I think that's the first one. So that's just an Australian lesson for anyone listening out there. Spanner equals wrench.
Yeah, spanner in the works. Feel free to use that one in your daily lives. But, again, when you think of all the players that were already out, and Brogdon and Tony Snell, Mirotic, and then you lose Bledsoe at the start of the game. Obviously, Philadelphia are missing Jimmy Butler, but you really needed some guys to step up. So I guess when you really think about it from a more serious perspective, I sort of wonder what Mike Budenholzer was thinking as that was going down, because we know in the game the other night against Brooklyn, Bledsoe picked up a tech. And to me, it didn't look like Bud was too happy with Bledsoe, who really, for the most part this season, has kept his emotions really under control. And he's done such a good job of not sort of getting caught up in that type of stuff. But for this to happen now, just a couple of days after the Brooklyn game, and in the first 2 minutes of the game, is the other thing. I feel like... maybe Bud would be a little bit disappointed that that's how it played out, because we know the Bucks were playing for something and trying to secure the number one seed. So as much as I'm probably going to listen to that radio call another 1,000 times before I go to bed tonight, you probably would like to see leading into playoffs. We know last year Bledsoe obviously got far too caught up in a matchup with Rozier. Probably would like to see him not get ejected in the first 2 minutes, but. The Bucks were obviously able to overcome that. They finished 128-122 winners. There's so much to talk about in this game, but what was the, I guess, the number one storyline for you? I can probably guess.
Oh, I mean, Giannis, right? It was a Giannis takeover game, I thought. This seemed like one where after Bledsoe got tossed, and I agree with you, he's got to work on that, especially because there's a chance, like, Philly's probably one of two teams the Bucks would see in the Eastern Conference Finals. And they're irritating. You know, it starts with Embiid, but I think just the whole team. I mean, Tobias Harris is a nice guy, but like J.J. Redick, Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler for sure. Like, this is a team that absolutely wants to get under your skin. You have to be ready for that. In the playoffs, you know, especially when intention emotions are running even higher, that's something where it'll be interesting to watch if these two teams do match up in the postseason. But from this game itself, like I said, I thought I was – after Bledsoe got tossed, little concern. Like, you know, there's so many players out already. All of a sudden, your starting point guard is basically George Hill, and you're going to have one of, like, Tim Frazier or Pat Connaughton be your backup point guard. That's not ideal. I mean, luckily, Philly was short a guard and Butler as well, but I was concerned that this game was going to go Philly's way after that. You know, Embiid coming back, he was playing pretty poorly early, but still, we know he's a good player. They're at home. I was like, oh, this might be tough. It really felt like Giannis just willed the Bucks to victory, especially at the end there. I mean, he really got going scoring all night. He kept that up late. Very end, starts to facilitate more, sets up some crucial assists for his teammates that really ended up with the Bucks win here in this one. And I don't know if it's an exclamation point because the whole season's been so good and there's still some time left, but certainly not hurting his MVP case with this incredible performance against the Sixers.
Yeah, there was some other things that obviously went on through the game. I think there was some more positive signs for the Bucks in general ahead of a potential Sixers matchup in the conference finals. But Giannis it was the game, and people that haven't watched the Bucks every night and probably don't really appreciate or understand what he's been able to do on a nightly basis for this Milwaukee team. Last night on TNT, a national TV game where there are stars missing and the Bucks are pretty shorthanded, they saw this guy. You called it. There was a point, and I tweeted the video out today where Embiid hits the three, Sixers go up 7 points in the fourth quarter, and Giannis just comes down and walks straight into a three, nails it, and he was just shaking his head. And I was with a friend watching this game, and I turned to my friend Ryan, and I said, "Well, I said the Bucks aren't losing this because Giannis is not going to let Milwaukee lose this game." You could just tell he had that look in his eye, and when you really think about that, and this is why. Why we've watched Giannis and we believe that he is the MVP, because we've seen him do this on a regular basis. But on this stage, to do that on that night in a game where the Bucks are looking to lock up home court for the entirety of the playoffs, there was a lot on the line. And you feel that they're probably going to get that anyway. But to make that statement right there, and you think back to a couple of weeks ago where Giannis has 50-52 against the Sixers and the Bucks lose, he has 45 this time, and he just he was not going to let the Bucks lose this game. And 45 points, 3 of 7 from downtown, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, 5 blocks, 4 of those on Embiid, and he sent Embiid flat on his back on one of those blocks. It was absolutely ridiculous. So if anyone from the outside wanted Giannis to have an MVP performance, then that was it. And I get the feeling after having that game last night that might have swung a lot of votes that are looking at this MVP campaign, because it was incredible. I can't really think of too many Giannis games. I mean, he's always incredible, but I can't think too many more unbelievable performances from Giannis in terms of putting the team on his back and carrying him to victory. It was I don't know how else to describe it other than an MVP performance.
It seems to me like he's becoming very aware of how good he is and how much impact he has on games. I mean, obviously on the court, he's been great all season. Some of the quotes coming from Giannis lately are just completely delightful to me. One that I took out of an Eric Names story that I particularly enjoyed was, Giannis talking about how guys guard him with centers now and they put their fours on Brooke. He said, "From what I've seen lately, they put DeAndre Jordan on me, they put Gobert, they put Joel, they put Jared Allen. They just keep doing that shit, but it doesn't work." And I just think that's incredible because, like, you think of, like, Giannis a year or so ago, it just doesn't – that would seem like – I mean, obviously, Eric, a very reputable reporter and everything else, but you'd say, like, really? Did he really say that? Lately, it feels like we've been getting more of that. I mean, obviously – he calls Ben Simmons a fucking baby, which was incredible in game. Basically, somehow he probably should have gotten a tech for yelling in his face before that. I'm glad he didn't. I always prefer when guys get to play. But it just feels like Giannis is getting a little bit of more of an edge to him now. Like, I know I'm better. I know we can win this. And honestly, I think that's kind of what it takes to be the guy, especially on a team where, I think Chris Middleton and Eric Bledsoe are both very, very good, but they're not, shoe-in star players. Middleton's an all-star this year, but they're not top 10 guys or whatever. It's not like Golden State. We have multiple superstars, especially to be the one guy on a team like this. I almost think you have to have that sort of edge that, no, we're going to win. I'm going to win this game. I'm the best guy here.
Yeah, I do agree that Giannis now is, and it's been building for the last year or so, but he's not afraid at all to let us know how confident he is in his own game. Anytime someone even, has a decent defensive effort on him, you mention that player's name to him and Giannis will be like, "Oh no, it wasn't him. It was me tonight. People can't stop me." Like that's what he believes. That's what he feels. And, you spoke about, Simmons and Embiid, but I mean, that's two very, very good defenders. I mean, they are really, really good defensive players. And Giannis, I mean, he treated Simmons, and Simmons is 6'10", and we know that he's super strong and he's able to sort of, use his body and strength to do a lot of things defensively. Obviously, he's super athletic, but Giannis does treat him. I mean, I know he said that, but he treats him like a fucking baby out there. Like, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, he sees Ben Simmons standing between him and the hoop, and he's like, I'm going to destroy you. And he goes so hard at Simmons, and there's nothing Simmons can do to stop him. And there was a point there in the fourth quarter where I was just sitting there laughing because Simmons, there was nothing he could do to stop this guy. And I don't know, when you think about this potential matchup in the playoffs, and I know I've been on the record a lot of times saying that I really think the Sixers are a great matchup for the Bucks. I still think that after watching the game last night. And when you look at Giannis and how easy he's been able to score, averaging over 40 points against the Sixers this year, 52 in the last game, 45 last night. I do wonder how those Sixers players felt after the game last night. I mean, they're not used to being abused like that, and this has been twice in the space of 3 weeks. And if they come up in the conference finals, do you think Giannis is going to be afraid about going up against Embiid or Simmons? I think mentally, Giannis right now, when he comes up against that Sixers team, he is just so comfortable and so confident that he can get whatever the hell he wants. And then he was even stepping out and shooting those threes. He hit three threes against the Sixers in the last game as well. So I think there may not be a team in the NBA right now that Giannis feels better against.
No, I would agree. I think the interesting thing to me is, like you said and Giannis said, Ben Simmons just can't guard him. It's as if not to throw a stray at Tim Frazier, but it's as if a player the size of Tim Frazier was on defense. Giannis treats Ben Simmons like that. It's almost with contempt. Like, you can't stop me from doing anything. I'm just going to dunk. And he does. I think he scored on him 4 out of 5 times. If I remember right, the fifth one rattled out. I don't think it was like a great stop by Ben Simmons on Giannis. And then you look at, well, who else on the Sixers can guard Giannis? Embiid is big and he does a pretty good job, but you can't really rely on him to do that for a whole game of Giannis being out there, because he's going to pick up fouls. You can't guard Giannis without fouling unless you just get dunked on like Simmons does, and that's not a really good strategy either. So then you go, okay, what other centers do they have? Jonah Bolden, who's, made some good shots. I thought he looked good in that game, but I wouldn't trust Jonah Bolden to guard Giannis or want to play him major minutes either. And then you look at Boban. Boban is effective. Giannis has no fear of Boban. He goes at Boban all the time, which I think is hilarious. If I saw Boban out and I was playing basketball, I would just probably fall over immediately. But Giannis has no fear of anyone. And, Boban probably maybe I'm dead wrong by the numbers. It feels like he does a decent job just because he's so damn big. But again, you're not going to play Boban major minutes. He's too slow. He can't get up and down the floor. If it turns into a transition game, he's immediately a liability, and he kind of is anyway if you drag him out of the paint. So it just feels like there's no good option for any team. But Philly especially, it feels like all of their options to stop Giannis are tough. And on the other end, Milwaukee's comfortable throwing Brook Lopez on Embiid, and they're not overly concerned with Brook Lopez picking up fouls. They don't need Giannis to guard Embiid. So it's kind of a nice advantage for the Bucks that way.
Yeah, it is. And I think you sort of, in what you're saying there, is probably leading into my next thought, which is I think conditioning-wise, if you're watching that game last night, you noticed that Joel Embiid was seriously tired early in this game. And Giannis and Embiid went at each other really, really hard all night. It was super fun to watch. I always like watching these two go against each other. But Embiid isn't conditioned like Giannis. Like, Giannis is just this maniac that can go for 40 minutes full throttle and push himself beyond exhaustion. We've seen him do it before. Last night was certainly one of those occasions. But Embiid, I don't think he has that. I don't think he has that energy. I don't think he has that motor to be able to play at that level. So if you get Embiid fatigued and he has to work so hard on defense as he does on offense, you see that he's not going to be as effective. He sort of can, have a tendency to take tougher shots, settle for threes. He took another 9 threes last night after taking 13 in the game the other week. So I think, the effect that the Bucks and Giannis and Lopez and all these guys have on Embiid, with that how hard he has to work to defend, makes a big impact. I was looking at the numbers because Embiid's averaging 34.7 points per game over the three games against the Bucks, but he's averaging 28.6 shots a game. Like, so he's getting 34 points, but he's taking 28 shots to get those 34. And the Bucks, I mean, they're totally fine with that. And part of the reason for that is obviously the Bucks defend the paint really, really, really well. But, you know, Embiid gets fatigued. He starts settling for those jumpers because he doesn't want to work through Giannis. And he doesn't want to work through Lopez. And he'll be attacking Lopez. And then he has Giannis flying over the top and blocking his shot like we've seen late in the fourth quarter. So, that's tough mentally for those Sixers players. And again, with Ben Simmons being the other one, he's averaging only 11 points down from 17 on the season, and he's taking over 9 shots to get those 11. So you talk about two guys that do a lot of damage in the paint. That's why I really, really like this Bucks team against the Sixers.
Yeah, I tweeted this during the game. I mean, Simmons has just had no success offensively against the Bucks. I mean, he got 13 assists last night, which is fine, but 6 points on 5 shots. It's like, cool. If one of your best 3-4 players, I think most people would have him. It's hard to say with that team. I feel like a lot of them are very close together, with Embiid obviously number one, but one of your best players, you know, one of your best young players for sure, if he's going to score 6 points, you just go, okay, that's fine. Tobias Harris only had 13 on 15 shots and, you know, didn't really see the ball much late. And I think that's really, people talk about, you know, the Sixers, oh, they haven't had time to figure it out. And I think it's easy to sort of, you know, write that off and like, what does that mean? You know, they're talented, whatever. I mean, we've seen what that means in that, you know, if Embiid's going to take 31 shots, there's not going to be enough shots for Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler. There just isn't. So at that point, you know, those guys are just, they're not being utilized properly. And I think, you know, Embiid's your best player. It's really hard to tell him to take less shots. But if he's going to keep taking 9, 12, you know, around double-digit three-point attempts per game, every time that's a shot that could be taken by Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler, and J.J. Redick, who has annihilated everyone, it feels like, but especially the Bucks. They'd leave him open too often, but even when he's not open, he can make shots. But it's just like, you're just totally fine. If 9 of Philadelphia's 36 threes, and that's a lot of threes, and they had a great game from three, but, you know, a fourth of them came from Embiid, you know, that's totally fine with the Bucks.
Yeah, I agree again. And this is, I think when you look at this Sixers team, for me anyway, this is why, you know, I find myself appreciating how special this Milwaukee group has been in terms of how unselfish they are and the fact that they are willing to sacrifice for each other. And I agree with you that I'm watching this game last night and this is without Jimmy Butler even playing. And I'm thinking, well, gee, I'm really glad that Embiid just keeps firing away and Tobias Harris isn't getting the ball in his hands right now. I would trust Harris to take a good shot, even though he was just 6-for-15 on the night. And you know, when Jimmy Butler comes back in, then whose shots is he taking? Embiid still was getting up 30 last time, and Harris, I don't even think, had 10 shots the last time they played because the ball, there's just not enough ball to go around. And these guys like to work in isolation, and they're not. I know, like you know, Simmons has 13 assists, and Embiid has 13 assists as well. And you think, wow, that's leaning towards playing unselfish ball. But I don't know how well all these guys fit. And they have great individual talents, and obviously they're all-star players, and they can hit big shots. But I just think that when you watch this team, as I said, you get a great appreciation for the Bucks, the way that they're able to share the ball around. And you have no hesitation with Milwaukee about bringing back in. You think if these teams play again in the conference finals, the Sixers will have Jimmy Butler back, and that's great. But Milwaukee's going to have Malcolm Brogdon, Eric Bledsoe, Nikola Mirotic, Tony Snell. All these guys are going to be back in the lineup. So, yeah, it continues to be an interesting dynamic in Philadelphia. I feel like the Bucks have the tools to really feel comfortable against them. And again, as we saw in the game in Milwaukee the other day, the Sixers were red hot from three, just 18-for-36, 50%. They actually missed a couple late. It was up over 60% for a lot of the game. Mike Scott goes 6-for-8, JJ Redick 5-for-9, Bolden 2-for-3. I mean, they could hardly miss a shot again. They were hitting tough shots. So, you know, for Milwaukee, you think that it's like, how much better could Philadelphia have shot the ball or played on offense, and they still find themselves losing the game?
Yeah, and if the Bucks have time to game plan specifically for an opponent like they would for Philly in the playoffs, I feel like, you know, Mike Scott was just open a lot, and it was something I saw. I forget who originally called it out. I sort of, you know, added, I quote tweeted and agreed. Pat Connaughton just kept leaving shooters, and it was kind of infuriating because he leaves them to double Embiid or whatever, and they're wide open. That's where a lot of those assists came from. it wasn't like beautiful ball swing. It was kick it out to Mike Scott, who all of a sudden can't miss threes. So I think Philly would be a fine matchup for the Bucks. I might have to redo my ranking of the opponents. I might rather see Philly than Toronto at this point. But I mean, on the plus side, those two teams are going to have to go through each other to get to the Bucks if everyone makes it to the Eastern Conference Finals. So at least those, you imagine that series between Philly and Toronto would be a tough one for both teams. Whoever comes out, probably going to be a little beat up, a little tired, you would think.
Yeah, I think that's right. First of all, I know I keep on saying I think that the Sixers are a good matchup for the Bucks, but I still think that any series with Philadelphia goes at least six games. I think any series between in the second round and beyond, I think is probably going a minimum of six. I don't see the Bucks rolling through a Toronto or Philadelphia team, just like I don't see Philadelphia or Toronto rolling through each other. I think they're going to be long series, and it's going to be a grind in the playoffs. But again, as good as Giannis was, the contributions from a couple of guys that just keep on delivering, and George Hill in particular had another 20 points, a 7-0 run for himself in the fourth quarter, really put the Bucks in a position to take the lead back and let Giannis again take control in the last minute or so. But he had 5 rebounds and 5 assists as well. I mean, George Hill, to come in when Bledsoe is ejected just 2 minutes into the game, he plays 32 minutes, shoots 2 for 3 from deep, including a huge one in the fourth quarter to keep the Bucks in the game at that point. He's just looking so comfortable out there. And I mean, this is George Hill from 3 or 4 years ago. I have not seen him look this good for an extended stretch that we've seen now over the last 5 or 6 games. He's been unbelievable. And then Sterling Brown comes in and starts again, another double-digit performance, 12 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, gets a steal as well. Sterling's just becoming that really, really consistent, productive fifth man in the starting lineup. And again, doing some of the things that we've come to expect and I probably take for granted with Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah, I think Sterling's continued to be great. I've been a big fan of how he's played recently. He's not even George Hill anymore. He's George Mountain. He keeps coming up so big for the Bucks. I tweeted that. I had to use it here too. But he's been playing like it's a matter of life and death. And speaking of matters of life and death, life can be stressful, but getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At GetEthos.com, there are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives who might throw a basketball at you. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured knowing you've taken steps to protect your family. And in most cases with Ethos, you can have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day with no hidden fees. Zero hidden fees here. Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in minutes. Just go to getethos.com. That's ETHOS. Getethos.com. One last time. GetEthos.com.
Yeah, well, you sort of touched on it there, but I know someone who could probably or will probably want to get in touch with Ethos after last night.
Seen a violent act like that in years. Get him out. Unbelievable. He had to be right in the face.
Oh, man. Joel Embiid probably needs to get onto Ethos because
he survived a brush with death.
Yeah, I mean, he's lucky to be here, so... Whew. Thank God. Thank God that he's okay. We, you know, our thoughts are with him in this time.
I was honestly, to be 100% real, I was worried he was hurt after the big Giannis block.
That was
scary. He fell hard. Yeah.
He did. Yeah, and that's a big guy. I think
I couldn't even enjoy it at first. Now I kind of can because I know he got up and he was fine. But at first I was like, oh, man, like that's an incredible block. But he might be. That was rough. I was worried, and especially he was limping before. It's just a tough game for Joel Embiid. I mean, props for him for fighting through. I don't know if Philly should have played him that much, but props. I mean, in all seriousness, he's quite the competitor.
Yeah, it was interesting, actually, how hard I mean, the Bucks had something to play for, so it doesn't surprise me that the Bucks went that hard because, and you know, we know that Giannis is just a complete maniac of a competitor, but for Philadelphia, I mean, not a lot to gain from the win for them. You know, I think they're still two games up in the third seed, so they're probably not going to lose that. But I must admit, when Embiid sort of went to the locker room earlier in the game, it looked like he tweaked his ankle a little bit there, then hits the ground as hard as he did. I was surprised that he played the amount of minutes he did it, particularly when he was a game time decision. He plays 34 minutes on the night. So, I will say, anytime I see a player go down like that or be in the air in that position, I always think of Andrew Bogut, obviously, who, yeah, it's obviously a different situation. He was trying to dunk the ball, but when they're coming down on their back like that, I just hope that they do not stick an arm out, or which is, you know, obviously the natural reaction. And when you're 7 feet tall and whatever Embiid is, 260, 270, however, you know, whatever he is, that's not good for your arm.
No, it certainly isn't. And just, I thought the Sixers had basically nothing to play for. They almost do. As you said, they're two games up, but it should be noted, Boston does own that tiebreaker. So if the Celtics went out and Philly would have dropped two more, they would lose that third seed, which obviously is huge, but it sure doesn't feel like that's going to happen.
No, I wouldn't. I don't think so. I mean, you know, I just think a guy with Embiid's history, potentially you don't push that hard in a game like that. But I think it's well established now that these teams, I mean, they don't like each other. I think that's fair to say. It's interesting because I was thinking about this afternoon about how I think that the Sixers are probably the Bucks' biggest rivals now, and I think this goes all the way back to that everyone just assumed that the Sixers were going to be the team that were going to take over the East, and they were just going to walk through everyone once Embiid and Simmons sort of, you know, were in their second and third year, which they are now. I think that Giannis took that personally. I think some people within the Bucks took that personally, and I think that's where the rivalry's been born there. I think the Bucks have a chip on their shoulder every time they play Philadelphia, and they're out there to prove a point. But I guess also when you look at the Celtics, the Bucks do not like the Celtics. They do not get along well, and that obviously goes back to the playoffs last year. And then the Bucks and the Raptors don't like each other. And if you talk to the Bucks players, I spoke to, obviously Thon is gone now, but there was a couple of times early in the season where I would just be talking to Thon Maker in conversation, and then he would bring up the Raptors. And it wasn't always like really relevant to the conversation that he would bring up Toronto. And I'd be like, oh, that's interesting. And I would say, what is it about Toronto? And he goes, oh, well, we haven't forgot. He's like, we haven't forgot that game six in Milwaukee. We still owe them. We're going to get them back. And so that's when when I hear that, and he said that multiple times, that's when I sort of realized that we know how competitive this Bucks team are, and they've only lost back-to-back games twice. Once. And really, anytime they lose to a team, they generally respond pretty sharply the next time they see them. So they take losing personally, and they haven't forgot any of those series. So I guess for Bucks fans, it's probably a good thing to think about how angry this group is anytime they play the three top teams that they're going to face in the playoffs.
Oh, absolutely. And I think almost thinking about the two series that the Bucks have played the last 2 years against Toronto and against Boston, I don't know how often you run into this, but I do feel like I hear pretty often, you know, the Bucks can't make a deep run because they don't have the winning playoff experience. And I just wonder, it feels to me like they haven't won a series together yet, of course, but this team has, you know, had ups and downs and been on the upper end. And it's both of those series, it felt like there was a time in both of those playoff matchups that they were going to win that series. They obviously didn't, but it's not like this group has no experience playing together in the postseason. They've played together quite a bit, 13 games over those two series, and it wasn't like they just got rolled and were out quickly. I mean, they went toe-to-toe with some really good teams and obviously came up short, but I don't know. Do you think the qualms about Milwaukee's lack of playoff experience together are a little unfounded?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big believer in that sort of theory anyway. I don't think that – I don't believe that you need to have experience to make a run. I think if this Bucks team hadn't been in the playoffs at all, then I'd say, okay, well, this is going to be a new experience for them. But these guys have played in the playoffs, and yeah, they haven't won a series. I don't think that really matters because they've been in big games. Obviously, game six against the Raptors, they were able to fight back, and obviously they lose in devastating fashion. But they've played in big pressure moments in that series. Game one in Toronto that year, they go in there and win the damn thing. At Boston last year, obviously, you know, under pressure, two zip down, you know, able to bounce back, win those two games. Giannis stands up in game six after being questioned in game five. So he's been able to stand up to the pressure. And then, you know, obviously game seven is tough on the road. But I feel like this team has enough experience in big games now and enough playoff experience that the big moments aren't really going to worry them, I believe. And I guess more broadly, my question is when people say that is, well, why do you like Philly? Mm. Like, what has Philly done? They beat Miami last year. That's cool. And then they lost in five games to the team that the Bucks took to seven. So what in that playoff run last year, what about that playoff run from the Sixers made you think, oh, yeah, this team, they're playoff hardened. They're going to be ready for this year. They haven't done anything. Boston, they didn't even have this team. I know you sit there and think, well, you bring in Hayward and Irving, and that's cool. Like, obviously, two star players that can make big shots in big moments, but bringing those two players in has completely messed up their chemistry all year, and they've been an absolute disaster. So it's a different team. So Boston hasn't won anything with this group in the playoffs, and Toronto has choked year after year. But their second best player, Kyle Lowry, goes to water every time there's any pressure in the playoffs. Ooh. So, well, he does.
Oh, I mean, no, did you see the numbers that actually supported that?
Yeah, I was reading that over the last couple of days, and I get that saying that Milwaukee is going to fail in the playoffs is a really easy take to have, and it is. I mean, it's an easy thing to say. So if you back the Bucks to win it all, then you're really going out on a limb. If you just sit there and say, well, they're probably going to lose, that's a pretty easy take to have, and no one's really going to question you on that. So I just think when I look at the other teams in there, I'm not really looking at any playoff hardened. We haven't got any LeBron-led veteran teams that have won championship after championship. There's no one really there in that situation. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
No, especially because it feels like even if that was a thing, just the amount of swagger the Bucks have as, you know, the NBA's best team this season, you'd think that would cancel it pretty easily. I mean, it would stun me if this team got to the postseason and was playing like Orlando and all of a sudden the pressure gets to them. Like, no, like what's like, they've dusted everyone. They've beaten everyone but Phoenix. Phoenix isn't going to come up in the postseason for probably several years. So it just seems like it shouldn't be that as much of a concern as it is. I don't know what you have planned next, but I want to share a quote that I read today quickly.
Please.
So did you see Haley O'Shaughnessy's thing on The Ringer about the Bucks and Sixers? Do they have a beef?
I did not.
So it's a fun read. She says they do. She's correct. And there's a tweet shared from Sam Esfandiari. I always say it wrong. Sorry, Sam. The fellow Blue Wire podcaster over at the Light Years Golden State Warriors podcast. But it's a picture of Giannis blocking Embiid fully up in the air on the one we talked about earlier where Embiid went down hard. And Sam said, and here's your MVP campaign poster. And the sentence that Haley O'Shaughnessy wrote right after is one of my favorites. I was going to tweet it. I couldn't think of an easy, good way to tweet it, so I figured I'd just say it here. A picture says 1,000 words. This one says, fuck you, 500 times. And I'm just such a big fan of the way she put that. And it seems pretty prescient to me.
Yeah, I did not say that, but... Yeah, I mean, again, as we've sort of mentioned throughout, it was some kind of statement, MVP statement, Defensive Player of the Year statement, just flat out Best Player in the World statement. I don't know. I mean, it was pretty special. It was one of, you know, for mine. You know, I think back maybe it was the most fun I've had watching the Bucks all season, just in terms of feeling like there's some real emotion there between the two teams. As we sort of said, they don't really appear to like each other too much, which always adds to something. And the fact that the Bucks are playing for so much to lock up that number one seed, I guess, just made it all the more special. And I think we've, I guess, you know, when you read some of the comments, I guess, from Bucks fans on Twitter and that through the year, there's been a lot of paranoia about, can the Bucks do this? Are they actually going to get the number one seed? Certainly in the last 2 weeks, there's been a lot of stressed out Bucks fans that they were going to let the number one seed slip. Me and you, we've been talking about this whole time. This was never in doubt for me. This team's been getting it done for 79 games now. The sample size is too big for them to all of a sudden fall in a humongous hole in the last week of the season and drop the number one seed. So it was never in doubt for mine, but nonetheless, it's still cool to look at that, the little, I think it's a little Z. Or some standings have like a little E for Eastern Conference. I think Z is the letter for just overall domination of the league. But it's cool. I think that, before the playoffs start, I think it's a good thing to sort of look back and think about how fun this sort of season has been.
I just think it's funny that, there was certainly some hand-wringing, and it's like, the Bucks' worst five-game stretch was 2-3, and they lost the back-to-back 1-2, and then lost another one, and then later win-loss-win. Like that was the worst it got. So it's not like they cratered. I mean, they were slightly less unstoppable than they were for really like that. The middle third of the year is when it really took off. There was some back and forth ball early after the really strong start, of course. And then you get just utter domination for like 15 to 20 games, and then a slight hiccup as, five players basically are hurt. But even with the hiccup, it wasn't like they were like losing 5 of 6 or something crazy like that. They went 2-3 over 5 games. It just happens. It's rare for a team to lose back-to-back games once. The Bucks almost didn't do it at all. It's just it was just I think people got a little too high on the hog for a second. They're not going to win 5 out of every 6 games or whatever, but definitely I think you said it right. Neither of us was sitting here biting off our fingernails worried that the Bucks were all of a sudden just going to be bad for no reason to close out the year.
Yeah, and again, I sort of mentioned this on the last pod. I think I sort of pointed to this, but I absolutely understand why there's this built-in paranoia or feeling that things are going to go wrong, and the Bucks do lose a couple of games there, and then the injuries just feel like they're piling up and piling up and piling up, and you start to wonder, well, is this whole thing, these 75 games are all going to fall over now at the worst time? But this team's been able to fight through it all. As we mentioned, they have guys stepping up, and George Hill and Sterling Brown. We think, or we believe, the latest that I have that is that Nikola Mirotic is still on track for the playoffs, and Tony Snell he's looked okay walking around. Obviously, I haven't been with the team for the last few days, but I don't think Tony Snell will be too far away. Malcolm Brogdon is off crutches now and walking around. He was obviously traveling with the team. He was looking good walking around, so he's obviously still a few weeks away, but I believe from what I know that they are still optimistic of, a timeline around the second round for Brogdon. So obviously going to be big. So things are going to hopefully start to come back together in terms of health, but they have 3 games left in the regular season and a home back-to-back. Well, we're very fortunate that we get to see a Brooklyn-Atlanta back-to-back for the second weekend in a row. So that should be a lot of fun at Fiserv, starting with Brooklyn tomorrow, 4 p.m. tip, I believe. It's a bit earlier, but interesting when we look at the standings, or when I look at the standings right now, I've got them up, and the Pistons in 6th, Brooklyn 7, Orlando 8, Miami 9, only 1 game separating those 4 teams at the moment. So when you think to who the Bucks might play in the first round, we still really have no clue what's going to happen there because it is so tight. But with the Bucks playing obviously Brooklyn tomorrow, if the Bucks win, they will secure win number 60, but they will also push the Nets closer to that 8 position and a potential matchup in the first round.
So I don't know if this is true. I read, I think Matt Moore tweeted, and I don't know if he even said it certainly, but the Pistons might be like the loser of a 4-way tie if all the 4 teams of these tied. So there's a lot of scenarios at play. It could get crazy. I think the Hornets technically still involved, which is sure they are. Well,
they are, they're 2 games back of the Heat in 9 with only, well, they got 4 games left, but they would almost certainly have to win all 4 and hope the other teams fell over for them to get back into it. I think that's going to be tough for them.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. I mean, I think we both agree. Just from the Bucks' perspective, kind of greet this scrum with like a resounding shrug. Like it doesn't matter. I think we both talked about the teams we'd like to see. But it really, I'd rather see Orlando or Detroit than Brooklyn or Miami. Those are probably my tiers. It's not something I would lose sleep over if I was a Bucks fan.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's probably where I am as well. Like I said, I'm not losing any sleep. I'm more keeping an eye out of curiosity, I guess, to see how this all shakes out. But certainly the Bucks have had their way with all of those teams through the season and haven't had too many issues outside of obviously a scratchy performance against Miami earlier in the season. But it will be interesting to see. As I mentioned just before, the Bucks are obviously going for win number 60 tomorrow. And it will be interesting to see. I know Matt Velasquez asked Giannis about potentially resting, and Giannis said, "Oh hell no." That's what he says anytime. I mean, he's not gonna put his hand up to rest. So it will be interesting to see what the Bucks do though over this back to back. My feeling is that Giannis will not play both games in the back to back. It just doesn't seem to make any sense for him to do that. Middleton looked pretty good last night. He had 22 points. He did have a rough stretch shooting the ball there and finishes 7 for 18. But it'll be interesting to see whether they want to give him a bit more rest. In many respects, you could say Bledsoe had a rest last night, but you know, I just think it's going to be interesting to see how they manage this. I would expect that some guys are going to get a rest over this weekend back to back. As far as what we know, all the guys are going to be putting their hand up to play and keep winning games. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know how you think that's going to shake out, but two winnable games for the Bucks, looking for win number 60.
Yeah, my guess would be we get one rest game of this back-to-back, maybe the second one, and then just, you know, make that the Bonzi season part two or three or whatever it is, and let those guys run him, Tim Frazier, etc. And then I think for the last game of the season, the home game against the Thunder, I would say you play everybody who's healthy, but like for like a half, you know, you don't really push them. It doesn't matter. The game probably will matter. The Thunder, who are trying to avoid the instant death that is matching up with Golden State in the first round. So it, depending on how between now and then goes, it feels like there's a good chance that game will be important for them. So I just don't think why bother getting caught up in another intense game when it doesn't gain you anything. So, you know, play everyone, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, and then let the Bonzi, Tim Frazier crew take you home on to the playoffs. That would be my suggestion. I don't really have insight, but that would be my guess too, I suppose.
I'm absolutely here for some more bronze bonds, as I like to call them, minutes. I think the statue's going up next to the bronze bonds in Milwaukee pretty soon. If he has another 15-15 game, I think they're going to get that statue going. But it is actually the Milwaukee Marathon tomorrow. So
are you running?
I'm not running. No, I'm not. I don't want to. I'm not going to get into it any more than that. But I'm not running. It's game day tomorrow. You know, I gotta be serious.
That's true.
I gotta be thinking about the Bucks and Nets. I can't be running. But given it is the Milwaukee Marathon, maybe Bud wants to run Tim Frazier out there for another 48 minutes tomorrow night. That might be fitting.
Tim Frazier had no idea what he was signing up for.
He did not.
Right. So yeah. So Kane, when's our next episode?
we're gonna do one on Monday. I for some reason, I don't know why, in the last episode I was just rambling on about our next pod was going to be on Monday. I was going to talk, they said we had three games to talk about, and then we finished recording and Ty was like, so I guess we're not recording on Thursday. We actually didn't in the end. It's Friday now, but I did completely skip an episode. But we will be recording on Monday. We'll have the coverage of the Brooklyn and Atlanta game and look ahead to the last game, the season finale, before the stuff gets real for the Bucks in the playoffs. So it should be a fun weekend. I assume you're going to catch the games?
Yeah, I should.
Yeah, well, hopefully by this time on Monday when we are talking with you guys, the Bucks have won 61 games and well-rested and looking forward to that game. But I think we've touched on everything we wanted to touch on today. It was I feel like it was a pretty fun episode.
He threw it from 20 feet away.
Yeah. Oh boy!
Incredible. It was heinous, I would say.
That Eric Bledsoe. I just, oh my God, what an absolute, what a villain Eric Bledsoe is. But I think we'll leave it on that note. What do you think?
I think we covered everything. You know, thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Kane. And remember, if you like the episode, subscribe, rate, review, everything else. Help us out. And, you know, we'll continue covering the dastardly Eric Bledsoe for many episodes to come.
Thank you, Ty. We'll catch you guys on Monday.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.